Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views and the views of our guest, and this evening we have with us our good friend Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. But before we get to Bob, I just want to briefly mention that Mr. Bernanke had given a speech, Ben Bernanke, who is the central banker, and it was very refreshing to see the Wall Street Journal refer to him as a central banker, because this is really what he is. The Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the federal government. It is one of the many central banks. Each country in the world has a central bank, and the central bankers work together to control the individual governments, and of course to move the world towards this one world government. Because behind this whole movement are powerful spiritual forces which are intent upon replacing the existing governments with uniting all the nations of the world, as Nimrod had tried to do over 5,000 years ago. But what's so interesting about Mr. Bernanke's remarks is he expresses some concern because we're having a growing disparity between the upper echelon, the people who are getting higher salaries, and the average individuals, and how terrible it is that some people are getting poor and some people are getting so fabulously rich. And if you are a talented baseball player, you can make $25 or $35 million a year, and if you're the head of a corporation, you can make fantastic sums of money, and if you're a worker, why, you may very well have problems eking out an existence. And of course, this is part of a long-range plan. This didn't just start yesterday. This is part of the plan that's laid out in the Earth Charter, where we'll have equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And of course, the equitable distribution of wealth within nations means that we will impoverish the people within our nation as we transfer our wealth to other nations. But there will always be a ruling elite. This is the way it was planned. This is exactly what's going on today. They plan to lower the living standards of our people. When you understand that, then so much of what is going on makes sense. You need to read the Earth Charter. You need to understand that this is a spiritual document laying out the plan of the people who are in touch with those beings from the other dimension. And, of course, they talk about the importance of this new spirituality. Understand, it was written by the son of Nelson Rockefeller, one of the richest men in the world, and by Marie Strong, one of the richest men in the world, and by Mikhail Gorbachev, one of the most powerful men in the world, the former head of the Soviet KGB, the former head of the Soviet Union. Why would these people be working together? Because they're all part of this world occult movement, dedicated to a new world order and a new world religion. And with that as the background, our good friend Bob Chapman. Hi, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Well, pretty good. I see it's kind of windy out your way today.
Oh, well, we need the rain. We're glad we have it. So anyway, as you praise what's going on economically, the stock market, the price of gold, I was rather surprised. It seemed to hold up fairly well today. It sort of suggests that something big is in the offing. They haven't told the American people what it is, but what's your take on what's going on economically to our nation? The president says we're doing great. The economy is great. We're bringing the deficit under control. We certainly are not going to increase taxes, we're going to increase spending, and we're going to balance the budget. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, it isn't quite that way.
But the president,
first of all,
that's what the president said. I heard him say it.
Well, you know something? Our president doesn't tell the truth. And neither does corporate America, and neither does Wall Street.
We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend, Bob Chapman. Okay, Bob, pick the story up from there.
Yes, they make us think that things are going quite well. I noticed that today, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, which is one of the largest buyers and securitizers of mortgage loans, and particularly subprime loans, has said that their earnings are going to be 20% worse than they anticipated. And this really is just the tip of the iceberg.
What do you think, that's because of the collapsing housing market in America?
Well, housing prices are going to go down, and that's going to exacerbate the situation with loans, because people who want to make new loans because their adjustable rate mortgages are running out, they will have to pay a higher loan rate, and that means they won't be able to afford it. And a lot of them won't even be given the courtesy of having a loan because their home is worth less than what they owe on it. And so what the bank or the lender says to them is that, well, the house has $300,000 owed on it, and our appraisal on the house is $280,000. So in order for us to make you a loan, we'll have to have you give us $20,000. And of course, these people should have never even had a loan in the first place. And so with that said, this coming 2 years, there will be approximately 2.7 trillion loans that are adjustable rate loans that will be coming up for renewal. And house prices, most places are off about 10% this past year. And incidentally, the rollovers on the loan this past year, the people who had to make new loans because they were adjustable, that number was about $800 billion. And you see today the horrendous increase in foreclosures and defaults, and you know that that was not a good year. And the next 2.5 years are going to be worse. And people who are doing 2 and 3 year ARMs 2 years ago, the ones 2 years from now, the ones that just did them in 2006, they're coming up for renewal again. And so it's kind of an endless problem as long as you have these renewable loans.
Well, hold on a thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan and certainly Bob Chapman is just saying that a lot of the people who have the adjustable rate mortgages, they call them ARMs, and now are having to refinance those, and sometimes why, when they go to refinance their home, they find that it's actually worth less than they actually owe on it. And so under those circumstances, why they're actually going to have to pay money to be able to refinance their home, and most of the people are not in a position to do that. So there are going to be some very real problems out there as far as a lot of the homeowners who've been allowed to buy homes who didn't have the credit worthiness or the salary sufficient to justify, you know, taking on the ownership of a home. And so what's going to happen to all those homes, Bob?
Well, I think over the next 2.5 years that we'll see 30% of adjustable rate mortgages fail. And there's going to be a lot of other fixed 30-year mortgages that will fail as well. So I think we could have 35 to 40% over a 2 to 2.5 year period. Interest rates are going to have to rise. One of the Fed presidents came out yesterday, it was the Plosner, and said that, you know, rates have got to go up. And why do they have to go up? We've been writing about this in the International Forecaster for months. The reason why they have to go up is because England and the European Central Bank are raising rates, and they are doing that because of inflation. And what they do in Europe, under the European Central Bank, they follow and they pursue money and credit, whereas the Federal Reserve in the United States pursues interest rates. And it used to be at one time the U.S. did the same thing that the European Central Bank is doing. And what the European Central Bank is trying to accomplish is stability. And stability, a part of that is keeping inflation at 2%. Well, their inflation right now is over 3%, that's official. And in England, it's probably around 3.5%, 3.25, that's official. Their rates are higher than that, but not appreciably so, but they are. And so what they're doing is raising their rates. Now, we need $2.4 billion, or approximately, dollars a day in investment by foreigners. And these foreigners are not going to continue to purchase American investments in dollars, particularly treasuries and agencies. Agencies are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And if they don't do that, because the yields on the bonds from the European countries and England are relatively as high, and they don't stand as great a chance of suffering from a depreciation in value like the dollar-denominated assets are, then I would think that people would not continue to buy U.S. treasuries and agencies and other securities denominated in dollars. That being said, it leaves no alternative but to eventually raise rates in the United States. And rates right now are way, way, way underpriced in the United States. And the reason for that is because there's a tremendous sea of liquidity out there. And that money is feeding speculation. And part of that speculation is purchasing treasuries and agencies, driving their yields down unnaturally. Now, that's caused because they can now buy insurance called derivatives. And I just wrote an article on it today for Saturday in the International Forecaster. And I think what's going to happen here is this thing's going to start to come unwound. And when it does that, interest rates will move even higher. And, of course, at the same time that this happens, which will probably be later this year and next year, the economy will turn down tremendously, not only here but throughout the world. And that will cause a deeper recession than we already have. I believe we are already in recession.
Well, it's really interesting. So it's really interesting.
That is the train that we're on, and that's the direction in which we're headed.
Well, it looks like, you know, of course, there's tremendous exuberance in the Chinese stock market. The people over there, you know, don't understand that whatever goes up can also come down. And apparently the Chinese stock market is just going through the roof, and all the Chinese that have any money are investing in there, and they're getting rich, and they think they found the secret to success. Of course, the Japanese people felt that the same thing, you know, back about 1990, and then, of course, with the collapse of their stock market, now what are we talking, 16, 17 years ago, things have really never come back again, have they?
Well, you're looking at 17,200 on the Nikkei Dow today. In 1991, it was 42,300. I predicted first that it would go to 20,000, and when it got there, I predicted it would go to 8,000. It went to 7,000, so I was pretty good on that. And it ran back up, and I said that it will go to 20,000 on a bear market rally, which will probably last several years, like 1931, 32, 33. And that it is done, and it's starting to come back down again. And Japan has never gotten itself out of depression. Japan is in depression. All they've done is print money, extend credit, and they have dropped their interest rates to 0.5% of 1%, which is virtually zero. And they have compounded the problem of massive excess money and credit liquidity throughout the world. And this is encouraged by the U.S. Federal Reserve, because they don't have to create as much money and credit if the Japanese are doing it. What happens is this. A commercial bank, say in New York City, calls up the Japanese bank and says, look, we want to purchase a billion dollars in yen. And so they said, fine, sold. And then the buyer, the commercial bank in New York, takes the yen and rolls it into dollars. And then they take that money and they buy things. It might be treasuries, agencies, might go in the stock market, it might go in bonds in Argentina or Iceland or who knows. And that is compounding the excess liquidity problem. Now, Japan still hasn't recovered. And they think they have, but they haven't. And we're looking still at 0.5% or 1%. Other nations, like in Europe, are clamoring for the Japanese to increase interest rates because they want the value of the yen against the euro to go up. Now, the Japanese really don't want to do that because that makes their products more expensive throughout the world. And so the Japanese are kind of stuck here. And I don't see them raising interest rates. And the upshot of that will be that the yen will continue to lose value. And they will go back into depression, which they've slightly come out of. And
yes, but of course, aren't they selling an awful lot of their goods all throughout the world? In other words, with very low yen, that's great for their production because now they can sell much more readily. Their goods are much cheaper than anybody else's.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because wages are falling and unemployment is starting to move back up again. And it's been, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years since consumption has gone up, except for maybe 1 or 2 months. The Japanese people realize what's going on, and they're not spending any money. And so the earnings may be going to these international conglomerates in what is a corporatist fascist society, and has never changed. It's always been that way. And they do not have domestic consumption, and they have to have it. And so they're not going to recover. China's just the opposite. China has tremendous domestic consumption, but they're still hung out to dry by their tremendous $1 trillion equivalent current account balance, of which about $750 billion is in U.S. dollar.
You're really speaking of the Chinese reserves, that they have a trillion dollars that they're, you know, behind their currency, and they're going to, my understanding is they're going to start spending that, putting into things of intrinsic value, feeling that the dollar may fall, and they don't want to be stuck with a lot of falling dollars. Is that right?
Well, actually, they started it about 2 years ago, and the media is now just catching on. We've been talking about that in the forecaster for 2 years, and they've been slowly buying gold and other currencies. But China's got the same problem that Japan had, and that is that, and we haven't mentioned this, and no one's written or talked about it for some time, the Japanese had unrecoverable debts in their banks of $1.3 trillion. And over the period between 1991 and last year, they took it down to about 250 to 300 billion. That's how long it took them to do that. China has a commensurate problem today with approximately the same numbers. And their banking system is upside down, just like the Japanese was.
And, of course, they're never going to be able to recoup the loans that are out there. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, we're living in a very unstable world because there's nothing behind the currencies. But my understanding is that China is buying gold, that India is buying gold, that Russia is buying gold. The Arab countries, Saudi Arabia and the others, are all buying gold because they realize that the world currency system is about to implode. We'll be right back here with Bob Chapman. Bob, is that accurate that a lot of these countries really are beginning to purchase gold? Even some of the central banks in Europe are beginning to purchase gold for the first time in a long while?
Yeah, that's true. The Bank for International Settlements came out with their figures, and there have been purchasers, Russia and others. There's four banks that I wrote about it today. It'll be in the next issue. And what we have in the gold market now is a situation where there is tremendous physical take delivery demand for gold all over the world. And on the other side, you have the central banks that don't want gold to go up, because if gold goes up, analysts, economists, professionals in the markets, and sophisticated investors will say, why is gold going up? Everything seems to be okay. And so gold is a barometer of problems, whether they're inflationary or deflationary. And that's why the central banks are desperately trying to reduce the price of gold, so nobody will know what they've done or they are doing. I think they're close to being out of gold, if not out, or at a place where they don't want to or can't sell anymore. And so we have the manipulators of the market, the central banks, particularly our Federal Reserve and particularly our Treasury Department, and they are trying to keep the price of gold down now with derivatives by shorting gold. And from here on out, they're going to lose a lot of money doing it. Because they don't care, they just keep on printing it. But the point is that the physical market will ultimately overwhelm the paper market. And the reason for that is that, yes, the dollar has gone down considerably against gold. And my subscribers are very aware of that, because they've made an absolute fortune in investments. And that's going to get much, much better as the time goes on. And so the only place that you can go today if you want to leave a currency is gold, because it's the only real currency. And for 2 years, every single currency, including the most strongest, the strongest currency in the world, which is the Swiss franc, all of them have gone down against gold. And so people are selling their currencies and they're buying gold, just not dollars. And once gold breaks above 850, which I am certain it will this year, then the public will start to get interested and take a look. And then it really will take off. It will take somewhere between $1,600 and $2,200, and probably $2,200 per ounce, to offset the effect of inflation since 1980. Now, once that happens at $2,200, gold ostensibly, from a fundamental and inflation point of view, is fully priced. But that's not the way markets work. Markets usually double from there.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back with Bob Chaffin in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Bob Chaffin. And Bob, I really believe that gold is going to go up to about $2,100, $2,200. That will make it equivalent to where it was back in about 1980. But as he points out, things never stop when they're supposed to. They always go higher than you anticipate. And he didn't mention it, but they usually go lower than you anticipate as well. But he feels that gold is on the upswing. And is that a fair statement? It's going to go a lot higher than $2,200?
Well, I think probably we're looking at somewhere between $3,500 to $4,000. And I think that's reasonable. I've been in the markets for almost 48 years, 47 years actually. And I believe that markets will do what they always do, they will always become overpriced. We just saw that in the dot-com era of the late 1990s. I mean, stocks were selling over $100 that are not even quoted anymore. Well, the same rapacious craziness that happened in that market and many others will happen to gold and silver. And so, if you're not in gold and silver, coins, bullion, stocks, you're not going to make any money, because you got to be in the game in order to win.
Well, what about the platinum? Do you think platinum is a good investment?
Yeah, I do, but you always got to remember it's a commercial metal. I noticed that the Automobile Association said that sales will probably be the same this year as last year. And I don't know what they're smoking over there, but it's not very good stuff. I totally disagree with them. They've been giving away cars for 6 years to keep the economy going, and the jig is up. And automobile and truck sales will be down 50 to 20% this year, if not more, even if they give zero financing, et cetera, et cetera. And catalytic converters contain either platinum, palladium, or both. And if production is going to fall, then usage is going to fall. And if that happens on a commercial commodity, which that is, then what happens is that the price falls. So I think it's good. I think there's been great gains made. I think over the year of next year, there'll be good gains made as well in platinum and palladium. But after that, I think there's going to be problems.
Do you think this year, maybe into next year?
Right, and I don't think it's going to drop precipitously. I just believe that it won't continue to do as well as it has, because there are those who like to invest in platinum, whether it's coins or bars, and they will always be there. And the whole world's going to change over the next 2 years. And that's one of the reasons why the Bush administration is extending into another war. Because, and I said this back in 2000, I said there will be a war next year. And it'll be in the Middle East, and it'll probably be in Iraq.
So we already had a war.
There will be a cataclysmic event which will cause this. And I predicted, and the date was 33 days away from 9/11.
Oh,
I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew something was.
Okay, you were speaking now then back in 2001.
In April and May of 2000.
Right, okay, so... Anyway, of course, they've certainly got us into a war now, and the war seems to be going from bad to worse, and so the solution to that is expand the war.
And that's what he's doing.
And my fear is we're going to be, either we will topple the government of Iran, which I feel is rather unlikely, but I think there is some effort being made in that direction, or we're going to be attacking Iran, and then heaven help us all. If we do attack Iran, what will happen to the price of gold? Pardon me, what will happen to the price of gold, silver, and what will happen to the price of oil?
All three will go up precipitously. And Iran is the second, third-rate military power. And I think it's the intention of the Bush administration to liquidate the entire population of Iran. But it won't be until Iran has retaliated. And they get some fierce stuff there they can throw. And there's a possibility that our fleet could be wiped out. And Israel could sustain massive damage. And in the final analysis, as I said, there wouldn't be any Iranians left.
Now,
this is their intention.
We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Bob Chapman, and Bob is painting a very sort of bleak scenario as far as an encounter with Iran, and feeling that we might even set out to inflict terrible, terrible damage on the Iranian people, and yet the Iranian people don't want a war any more than the American people want a war. I mean, the American people are very angry with President Ahmadinejad because he's put them in a position of jeopardy. And I mean, certainly I think the American people should be very disaffected with our leaders who are putting us into potentially terrible danger. I feel that when you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. And I'm sure when the Germans started the First World War, they never thought, or they didn't really start it, it was forced on them. But anyway, when they got into the war, they never thought it would end the way it did any more than the people of Austria-Hungary or the people of Turkey or the people of Russia realized that their societies would be totally destroyed in the First World War. And I'm sure the followers of Hitler never thought that their cities would be nothing but rubble when the war ended. Do you think that the average American realizes that there could be disastrous consequences if we get into an expanded war with the entire Muslim world?
Well, there's always a possibility, too, that Russia and China could join the fray. And that would put another level of possibilities there. If Israel uses the low-potency atomic weapons that they said they want to on Iranian installations, it could bring the other countries in to the conflict. And if they do what they say they want to do in that regard, then millions and millions of people in the Middle East will die from the results of nuclear fallout.
Well, my concern would be that there might be retaliation against our country. Is it possible that certainly you don't need an intercontinental ballistic missile to deliver a nuclear weapon to America? You can do that from a passing freighter going up and down our coast.
Well, today one of the mullahs said that in Iran that if the United States attacks Iran, their areas of interest will be attacked as well. Because we have people who are in position to do that. So our president has left our southern border wide open, and hundreds of thousands of Iranians and others have crossed that border, and some of them do have atomic weapons.
Hold on, we'll be right back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And before we go on, Bob, I'd like you to go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can get a copy of your weekly, or I should say bi-weekly publication, because it comes out midweek and end of the week, and usually 25 pages each time. And I'll have to admit, I always look forward to it and read it through. Fascinating information, tremendous insight into what's going on. And Bob's certainly has a tremendous grasp of information and understanding of the geopolitical forces that threaten the very survival of our land here and the stability of the so many of the lands throughout the rest of the world. So how can people get a copy of the International Forecaster and see if they're interested in subscribing?
Well, the International Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We have an email edition that goes out on Wednesday and Saturday, and we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. If you'd like to visit our site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. Or you could call toll-free to 800-375-4188, 800-375-4188, and you can get either an email or a hard copy as an introductory copy.
All right, fine. Well, now, you were saying that you were really very, very concerned that some of the massive numbers of people who the administration has permitted to come into this country since 9/11 Now we're basically talking about the fact that the Bush administration telling us we're in a war with terrorism, yet refusing to enforce our border laws, doing everything they can to discourage our border agents from enforcing the laws. And then if they do, just by chance, happen to catch somebody from a terrorist country, they immediately release them in the catch and release program, because after all, we don't have any place to put them. So we catch them and then we release them. It's sort of like a little game you play, like when you're going fishing and, you know, you catch the fish and you let the fish go away. Why would they do something like that? And Bob is suggesting that some of these people may well be terrorists. Is there any hard evidence that they are? Do we know?
No, but we do know that there's been reports from Mexico by what they call coyotes, the people who illegally bring usually Mexicans and Central and South Americans into the United States, although some people from Asia have come in that way. And they have brought Iranians and other people from Arab nations into the United States. And they know that. And they were carrying suitcases, and they could have contained suitcase nuclear weapons. And so we won't know until they use them. And I'm sure that they would go after the cities that have the largest Jewish populations, which are the major cities in the United States.
Well, let's hope and pray that that does not occur. Although I noticed how television is being used, the program 24, is the story about a nuclear attack on America. Heroes, you'll see the mushroom cloud. Jericho, the story of a nuclear attack on Denver and many of our other cities, and what happens in the small outlying community that has to fend for itself now that there's no longer a central authority. So, but what they're doing is they're using television to implant in our minds and manipulate us into the reality of a nuclear attack on America. And I almost feel that they're telling us exactly what's going to happen ahead of time. So go ahead and pick the story up from there, Bob. What do you
anticipate
will happen?
We've reached into the future and looked to see what possibly could happen. The best thing that could happen is that there's no action against Iran. And I started to write about the dichotomous nature, the split that has occurred within the Illuminati. And not many people have followed this, and it's too bad, because it explains why Zbigniew Brzezinski, before Congress, the Senate committee this week, laid out in chapter and verse that we should not invade Iran, and that we should pull our troops out of Iraq within a reasonable period of time. Reasonable, from his point of view, is, you know, a year or two or three. And he represents, he is the top thinker within the Illuminati, and he is reflecting their ideas and views from Europe. And I remember about 7 months ago I wrote about an interview that he had with the press that I got from some obscure publication. And he said that we set this whole thing up, wrote the whole plan up in the early 1980s, and the people in Washington and the White House absolutely made a mess of it. And we're going to have to start all over again. And for those of you who would like to find out what he said, I'll have it, you know, in this issue of the International Forecaster coming up. But in essence, he's saying the same thing that most Americans are saying. Let's get out of Iraq 2 or 3 years. Let's not invade Iran. And let's go back to our luminous drawing board. Brzezinski is an evil genius. He's smarter than Henry Kissinger. And incidentally, for those of you who are not aware of it, Henry Kissinger has been an advisor to the White House for the last 3 years. And he is the one who has been helping them formulate their plans in the Middle East, which have gone asunder. And he was the same one that worked with Richard Nixon and made a mess out of everything.
And you're talking about during, during Vietnam. I think it's so interesting that the same architect was there during our no-win war in Vietnam, who is there with our no-win war in Iraq today.
Same players,
same ideas.
The expostulation here is perhaps they may live too long.
Well, I believe that Henry Kissinger is another very evil, evil man. And I believe he is...
far more evil than Brzezinski. I mean, this guy is a very, very, very bad person. His personal life is terrible. You don't even want to hear about it.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, the question is, which position will we follow? Will we follow Brzezinski's idea? And that is, of course, begin moving to pull our troops out of Iraq and not invade Iran. It almost looks like they have so much capital invested in putting our naval forces over in the Persian Gulf and creating this impression that Iran is such a terrible threat to us, and, you know, Iran wants to destroy the United States and destroy Israel, and Iran is determined to be the major power over there. That's why we've got to destroy them. And there are all sorts of justifications that are being put out why we need to attack Iran. I find it difficult to believe that after investing all this time and effort and propaganda and military supplies, that we're just going to walk away from there and say, oh, shucks, we changed our mind. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a toss-up. But I'll tell you, if George Bush pushes for invasion toward the end of March, you might see him assassinated. And they did that to John F. Kennedy, and they would not think for one second of doing it to him. And whether they're in the Illuminati or not, I mean, they do not want that to happen. So it's going to be very interesting. But I can't make a decision on that. I just don't know which way it's going to go.
All right, we're just going to have to wait and see that. All right, fine. Well, of course, right now, as far as the markets are concerned, the market seems to be doing well. We're told the economy is really doing fairly well, but I guess every day we read about another plant closing down or somebody cutting back on the number of employees, and we don't hear about a lot of companies opening up and doing massive hiring. We hear about massive laying off of workers, but not about massive hiring. And it would appear that the plan, the long-range plan, to impoverish our country and lower our living standards is well underway. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, unfortunately, you're right, it is. And free trade and globalization, since the early 1960s, has been the plan to accomplish that. And that free trade and globalization getting really underway starting in the early 80s. And now in the last 10 years, you've seen it go berserk. And what it is a transference of manufacturing and other businesses to foreign countries. It's ripped the heart right out of the United States. I mean, we just cannot continue to do what we're doing. We're going to become a second or third class nation.
But don't you really think that's the plan, Bob? Don't you think that's what they really want to accomplish? It's not happening by accident. I believe it's happening by intent. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question. Because the American people would never, under normal times, accept world government. And if they're on their knees financially and economically and they've lost their homes, we've got 30% unemployment, I think people are going to play ball with whoever feeds them. And either you get a revolution in your hands, one or the other. And the way American people act today, especially people under 50, I don't think that they would react. I think that they would capitulate.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. And of course, you know, especially if we should have some sort of a major catastrophic event. And of course, certainly in the Military Commission Act, which President Bush signed last year, why I've said, you know, in essence, that, and this is in the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, in case there is a national calamity, and they specifically mention an epidemic, or a natural disaster, or civil unrest in this country, that they can actually have a martial law across America. One of the things that amazes me is nobody's upset about that except a few liberal Democrats. I mean, the Republican conservatives aren't concerned. The Christians aren't concerned. It's only people like Patrick Leahy who says, this is the blueprint for a military dictatorship or for martial law in America. Does this bother you?
Nobody's
concerned?
They're not listening. I mean, it's the Super Bowl, and it's, you know, Friday night football or Monday night fights or whatever it is, and the six-pack, and that's all they care about. And that's where our, you know, country's headed. And they're going to wake up one morning and find out that everything they have is lost, and they're being, you know, sent to a job from Chicago to Los Angeles, and their wife is working in Atlanta, and the kids are in a government school in Cleveland. And once a year, they get together for 3 weeks at some government-sponsored vacation rendezvous.
Well, I'm more concerned about those Japanese internment camps that we're refurbishing, because we just don't want anybody to forget about how terrible it was to put American citizens innocent of any crime in a concentration camp simply because of the color of their skin, but in 1942. So we're refurbishing those camps, so nobody will ever think that, nobody will ever forget. But then, of course, we're also giving Halliburton $385 million to build new internment camps, and they haven't quite correlated those two things. Maybe you could explain that to me, why that's happening.
Well, I think you should be very flattered, because you're one of the people who's going to be in those internment camps.
Right, Dick, probably fairly close to you. I figure they'll come around you up, too.
Oh,
we'll have a chance to meet.
If they could find me, they would have round me up already.
Well, I really do believe that they're making preparations for civil unrest in this country. I think everything is in place. And even the laws are in place. The plans are in place. The military documents are in place. We even have one that deals with how the military will deal with the civilian internees in the military camps.
Well, I think this Abu Ghraib in Baghdad and, of course, Guantanamo Bay has set the precedent for the madness of torture, abuse, rape, and all of those horrible things, and murder. And, you know, you and I have lived for over 70 years, and we know that there was an America that was nothing like this. And we now live in a country that we don't know. We have a leadership that does horrible things to people. And that's certainly not right. God doesn't want us to do that. And we have a government that does do that. And Congress does nothing about it. And so if that continues and the economy collapses, either they will herd everybody to where they want them herded to, or there'll be a revolution.
Well, I think that, Chris, what they really want to do is have a chip in everybody, one way or another. Maybe they'll just start out with an ID card with a chip in it, and they're putting chips in the new passports. Certainly, they have our cell phones. Every cell phone, they can actually listen to your conversations, even when you don't have it turned on. That they were rigged like that. Why would they have built that into the cell phones unless it was long-range planning so they could monitor what everybody said all the time?
Well, I call that a police state.
Well, I mean, obviously this is not something that they just decided after 9-1-1. All of these plans have been in place, and they've certainly, through Echelon, they've been monitoring our telephone conversations and our emails and faxes for over 20 years in violation of our own laws, done by the NSA. Anybody who hasn't read the book NSA Big Brother's Watching You, or written a decade ago, but it's just as apropos today. Anybody can look it up on the internet under Echelon, E-S-C-H-E or A-L-O-N, Echelon, and they've been violating the laws. And now they're, of course, trying to say, well, oh, well, this is perfectly legitimate. We have to do this to protect you from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's living in a cave someplace, or maybe he's long since dead. Doesn't matter. We've got a boogeyman. We're going to protect you from, and it's all for your own good. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up our program with Bob Chapman. Well, Bob, go ahead. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, I think the horizon for listeners should be, as I've said many times before, is to get rid of your credit card debt, your revolving debt, and try to get rid of the debt on your vehicles. And you got to keep your mortgage debt. And but if you get rid of those and you have some money saved, and maybe gold and silver related assets, then you got a good chance to not lose your home and perhaps be able to make it through the difficulties that I see ahead. And I know that I've been preaching that on this program for the last 6 years, and I get some wonderful letters from people telling me that, I did all that, and I just sold my home last year, and I'm in gold and silver related assets, and they're going up, and I can never thank you enough. So we've been right. And I think we're going to continue to be right. And I think you should give it a lot of hard thought. And you should get yourself a free copy of the International Forecaster, because you have no idea the coverage that we give to everything that's going on in the world.
Well, it is fascinating. I always enjoy your perception. I sometimes wonder where you get such a vast amount of information.
It well, we do a lot of research.
I know you do. It certainly saves me from having to do a lot of research. And if there's anything there I have a question on, either we'll get in touch with Bob, or I'll go up on the internet and check it out, Google it in, and Bob is right. He is very careful in what he puts in his International Forecaster. And I'm indebted to him for the work he does. And I will tell you that many of our listeners take the Forecaster. And I think that we have some of the best informed listeners in the entire nation.
Well, I thank the people who are subscribing, because it helps this whole thing keep going. And we certainly do our best to bring you everything that we can at a reasonable price. Other publications along the same lines cost $500 a year and more. And some of them are $5,000 and $10,000 a year, and they don't even cover what I do. They can't, you know, put a candle to it. And I kept it that way because the little people are the people who need help. And incidentally, when I get an inquiry from people, I email them back and answer their questions, but very often I call them.
And I know, and I appreciate so much what you do, and always calling me, hey, we're out of time. Good night. God bless. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and we always enjoy having Bob on our program. He always has a tremendous insight into so much of what's going on, but we are in a very, very difficult financial position as a nation. We have a talk, it's called Financial Tsunami, and we have a syllabus that goes with that. We think it's probably as good as anything you're going to get. It will explain to you the fraudulent nature of our monetary system, and of course, as Daniel Webster said, certainly of all the contrivances ever conceived, none to defeat the working man and rob the working man, none is certainly more effective and efficient than paper money. And that's what we have, a paper money system with nothing behind it. As Aristotle had said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a fiat money as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. Well, we don't have either perfect authority or godlike wisdom in kings. We have people who are gaming the system for their own advantage, and those are the central bankers, not only of America, but of the world, working in concert to create a world feudalistic system. So said Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, on page 324 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. You get that quotation and so many of the other quotations in my little pamphlet, The History of Money. We recommend it, inexpensive, but very much to the point to help you understand what is taking place in the world financially. The books you need to read, number one, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Number two, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. Number three, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, the story of what happened in France in 1789 when they did exactly what we are doing today. And it's like deja vu all over again. The breakdown in morality, the breakdown in belief you had to work to get ahead, and everybody could get rich, and the trouble is that's not the way the game is played. People in China think they're all going to get rich in the stock market. An awful lot of people in America think they're going to all get rich in the stock market without realizing that they're playing with monopoly money. And, of course, the real money is what they're trying to discourage you from having. They do not want you to understand the history of fiat money systems and the fact that they always eventually collapse. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We urge you to begin making your preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. Will there be civilian unrest? Will there be a breakdown in the structure of society? Certainly, if you do not already have your supplies of food, permanent long-range food, the other things you should need in the way of water purification, the Berkey water purifiers, certainly barrels, pumps, things like that. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a copy of our emergency food and survival catalog. If you were interested in health products, incidentally, we are carrying Iodorol, which is a iodine preparation. Certainly, we have a number of excellent products. If you're interested, if you'd like the health catalog, give us a call. And we carry a number of books. Certainly, the book by our good friend the neurosurgeon from Jackson, Mississippi. Anyway, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. If you haven't read the book, well, you certainly should. It will give you a tremendous insight into what's going on in the world today and what you need to do really to protect yourself. And so that's Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And you probably will want to get some of the videos that are put out by the guests for this next hour, Dr. Lorraine Day. And Dr. Day will be with us as soon as we get back from the break here. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and well, our guest for this hour is Dr. Lorraine Day, who is an orthopedic surgeon at the same time I practiced. Only she was the chief of orthopedics at the University of California service at the San Francisco General Hospital and the associate professor of surgery at the university, and certainly was one of the outstanding orthopedic surgeons in the entire nation, and certainly would be a professor someplace today if she hadn't become entangled in the battle to try to address the AIDS epidemic as a communicable disease, that tried to stop its spread. And of course, that led to her becoming aware that there are other forces at work in the world. And eventually she left orthopedics, and she spends full time now trying to educate people about nutrition and about health. And it's always a pleasure to have Lorraine with us in the evening. Hi, Lorraine. How are you doing?
Fine. Just fine. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing just fine. Good. And you sent me a list of some of the things that we might talk about. And so why don't we perhaps get into this subject of splendor, this new sweetener that is really sweeping the country and is being adopted so widely. And we can talk about a number of issues, but I thought that was a good place to start.
Sure. You know, we can talk about just artificial sweeteners in general.
All
first,
right. Go right ahead.
The saccharin was the big one for a long, long time, and then the word came out that saccharin was very detrimental to one's health, and I understand that was about the same time as the patent for saccharin ran out, and so the pharmaceuticals came up with a new one, which was NutraSweet. And so that's called aspartame or aspartame. And many people don't realize that these are isolated amino acids. NutraSweet is isolated amino acids. And they are, people who are lifting weights and people who are bodybuilders are taking huge doses of isolated amino acids, not necessarily NutraSweet, but other kinds of amino acids. Those are very dangerous. God made amino acids in food, but they are put together in such a way that they are not damaging. When you take food apart and you start concentrating isolated elements in the food, you make them into a drug and they are always harmful. Well, NutraSweet causes blindness, other kinds of visual disturbances. It contributes to Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig's disease and all sorts of neurological diseases. I have a friend who has lost the vision in one eye from drinking diet sodas. I mean, she's completely blind and she's only in her 40s from drinking diet sodas. So these things are extremely dangerous. Well, now that there is a lot of bad press about NutraSweet, well, now along comes Splenda, and they said Splenda is a wonderful thing. It's 600 times sweeter than sugar, and it apparently, they say, has no side effects. Well, that is not true. It turns out that Splenda is an organochlorine. Now, that is a very important thing to know because it's in the same category as insecticides, pesticides, and herbicides, which are all very damaging to the human body. The difference between the chlorine that is in Splenda and the chlorine that is in salt is it's got a different bond. The salt chlorine has an ionic bond, and the Splenda, the chlorine, has a covalent bond, and that is very important to chemists because that makes all the difference in the world as to whether it is non-toxic or highly toxic. And so this Splenda causes kidney damage, liver damage, headaches, skin rashes.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. All right, Lorraine, I apologize, but we actually think the computer runs my program. I just sit there. Anyway, please go right ahead.
Okay. This Splenda causes weakened immune system, irregular heart rates, agitation, shortness of breath, skin rashes, headaches, liver and kidney damage, birth defects, and cancer. So what people have to do is really get rid of their desire for sweet stuff. People say, well, what shall I use if I don't use sugar? Sugar is bad for you, but it's not nearly as bad as these other things. So don't say, well, I'm not going to eat sugar, I'm going to eat a sugar substitute. And the real problem is diabetics are eating all of these things, and the diabetic associations are promoting them when they know at the very top that they are very damaging to the body. They are not good for diabetics or anybody else. What a diabetic ought to do is get rid of the desire for sweet. Because many of these things, it's been known now, and there's a lot of press about it recently, that if you drink diet drinks, you will gain weight. You can't trick the body. The body knows that sweet is coming in, and many times it makes you hungrier, and you eat more food. The only way to really lose weight or to reverse adult onset diabetes, that's diabetes type 2, is to eat less and exercise more. Every diabetic, if they eat less and exercise more, particularly they've got to cut out all this animal fat in their diet and stop eating sugar or sugar substitutes. And when they do that and start exercising, they will reverse their type 2 diabetes. It will happen. Everybody knows that. The doctors all know that. Why doctors don't spend any time telling their patients that, I don't know. It may be that so few patients are interested in doing that, or the doctor just does not have enough time. But the doctor does know that if you stop eating animal fat and sugar and you start exercising and you decrease your calorie input, you will reverse your type 2 diabetes. So instead of going for all of these sugar substitutes, which are all very, very damaging, or if you eat sugar, processed sugar, you will suppress your immune system for 5 hours after you eat it. It actually causes your white blood cells that fight infection and fight disease to slow down and multiply less, so you will have less resistance to disease. So what you really have to do is what I said, decrease your desire for the sweet.
All right, hold that thought. Hold that right there for just a moment, please. We'll be right back here. All right, Dr. Day is simply saying if you have type 2 diabetes, what you've got to do is cut down on eating animal fats and eating sugars, and then, of course, you've got to certainly exercise more. If you do, you'll reverse your type 2 diabetes. So go right ahead, Lorraine.
Well, that's right. And so there are all sorts of sweet things that we can eat. We can eat apples and oranges and all sorts of fruit. And those things God made for us, and they're in their natural form, and they don't harm us. But if we start concentrating things up like processed sugar or taking the amino acids apart, I think I've said this on your program before, but there is a phrase that is said at many weddings, and that is, what God has joined together, let no one take apart or no one put asunder. Well, God made the same rule for food. He made food, and he doesn't want us to take it apart and concentrate it up and make it into something that acts just like a drug, whether it's vitamin pills or mineral pills or any of these other kinds of things. So we're not supposed to take it apart, because if we do, what we're really saying is God didn't know how to do it, and man can make it better. And any time you start doing that kind of haughty, arrogant business, you're always in trouble.
I agree with you totally in that God knew what he was doing. Sometimes man has no idea what he's doing.
That's right.
And so much of what we do actually brings the diseases on ourselves. So what about something like stevia? Do you think there's a place for that?
Well, again, what stevia does, again, is it's just highly concentrated sweet. And we don't need that. We should learn to eat natural. Any sweet that you get in it, strawberries are sweet, cherries are sweet, raspberries are sweet, apples are sweet, peaches are sweet, pineapple is sweet. That's where we should get our sweet, when it is attached to fiber the way God made it, because he made it in a way that doesn't harm our body. I can't remember what is stevia, something like 1,700 times sweeter than sugar, some ridiculous thing. Here's a problem with stevia, too. It is so concentrated, and you need so little of it to put in a product to make it super sweet, that when it's put in a product, if it's below a certain percentage of the product, the manufacturers of that product do not have to list it on the label. And so that's one reason they love stevia and Splenda and things like that, because they can use it in such small amounts and yet it's very potent that they don't have to list it on the label. That is very damaging. A lot of people say to me, well, you know, I guess I should read labels. And I answer, no, I don't read labels. I don't buy anything with a label on it. My apples and pears and peaches and pineapples don't have labels on them. If you eat brown rice and baked potatoes, certainly without the sour cream and all that business, but baked potatoes and yams and asparagus and all the wonderful things, nuts, you don't have to read the labels. And that's the way to eat.
All right, fine. Well, now you have a section. One of the things you thought we could talk about tonight was microwaves. Certainly, most people have a microwave. They're just so convenient.
Well, they're very damaging. First of all, it changes the character of the protein, so it makes it actually toxic to the body when you microwave your food. Microwaves work totally different from a regular oven, and it actually starts shaking the particles in the food from the inside out, and it changes the character of the food. Not only that, if you are anywhere near the microwave, if you're within the 4 feet of the microwave oven, it can cause damage to your own body. So if anything is really super convenient, you have to start looking at whether it is really helpful to you or not. It has been shown that microwave ovens are unsafe to heat up baby's milk in. Microwave blood can actually cause damage to a patient who receives it. It is very detrimental to your health, and you shouldn't use them. They come in every house. That doesn't mean that you have to use them. You can store things in them. That's what they're best used for. Store things in your microwave oven. It gives you another shelf. And you should never turn it on, because it's just too damaging. As I said, it changes the character of the protein, and it makes it into a poison. So, and it's been known in other countries, when you microwave food, it actually becomes a carcinogen. It causes cancer. If you microwave milk and cereal grains, it converts some of their amino acids into carcinogens. That means cancer-forming substances. If you thaw frozen fruits, it will convert their glucoside and galactoside, these are the sugars in the fruit, and make them carcinogenic. If you have even extremely short exposure of raw, cooked, or frozen vegetables, it will convert their plant alkaloids into carcinogens. And microwaving meat will sufficiently to ensure that they are sanitary, will cause formation of a compound called D-nitrosodioethanolamine, a well-known carcinogen. So you don't want to do that. You just want to, if you want to cook your food, you use a regular oven or you use a stovetop, but do not use a microwave. They're extremely damaging to your health.
Well, now, if this, and I'm not questioning whether it's true or not, but if it is true, why doesn't the Federal Drug Administration or other government agencies warn the American people about the real danger that comes from the microwave, as far as a transformation of our food and creating carcinogens?
Well, of course, there are two reasons, as you well know, Stan. And number one, for those who still think your government has your best interest at heart, you need to listen to Stan's program more, because your government wants you dead. The government is not here to protect your health. The government is here as the tool of the mega corporations. Whatever is good for business of the mega corporations, that's what the government does. The FDA has a revolving door between the device companies, such as the microwave oven, and the chemical companies and the pharmaceutical companies. It's just a revolving door, and the FDA is there to service those people and make sure they get what they want rather than to protect the health of the public. And it's been that way for a very long time. Nothing has changed. By the way, Stan, I don't know, you probably know this, but when we were speaking out about the AIDS business, I think Kessler, wasn't he the head of the FDA?
I think it was.
Kessler was head of the FDA. Now he is dean of the UC San Francisco Medical School, where I was on the faculty. How do you like that one?
Well, because they sort of play a revolving chairs.
That's right. That's right. And, of course, UC San Francisco Medical School is, I think, one of the three top schools for receiving grants from the National Institutes of Health. So it always helps to have somebody there who's been on the inside.
Well, let's talk a little bit about cell phones. Do you know anything at all about cell phones? You know, there's some people who suggest, you know, that cell phones are really potentially dangerous, and yet the government, there are all sorts of websites up there, will tell you there's absolutely no danger from cell phones. If there were, why the government wouldn't allow it?
Well, again, there's a lot of evidence that cell phones are very damaging to the brain because they're held close to the head. They cause radiation and heat. And there is some significant evidence that suggests that indeed cell phones can cause brain tumors, and particularly in very young people. So here all these kids are running around with cell phones, and I think this is going to be a real epidemic in the future, that there's going to be tremendous brain tumors in many of these young people who are using cell phones at a very, very young age. What the government always wants to do is kind of promote both sides of an issue until everybody gets fatigued with it and they say, well, I don't know whether they're dangerous or not. You know, one group says, yes, they are. Another group says, yes, no, they aren't. And so, therefore, I don't know, and there's no truth, and we'll never know, and so forget it. And I'm just going to go ahead and do what I want. And this is frequently what the government will do in many situations. They certainly, as you know, did it in the AIDS epidemic. You know, AIDS was out of control, then it was in control, then it was under control, then it was out of control, until people get fatigued, and after a while they don't even want to hear it.
That's very interesting. One of my best friends had given me a magazine put out by the University of Washington, and they were saying that one of their scientific work had shown that there was definitely cell phone radiation would produce altered DNA, and so they were actually threatened if they allowed, the university was threatened if they actually allowed those papers to be published. And they were allowed to be published. They put it in the journal they sent out, and I still have the reference to that. You're not going to hear that out across America. Yes, there really are problems. I guess they do threaten people who try to get the truth out, and at least here was one university that probably lost most of their grants as a result of trying to protect the American people. And, of course, you're going to use a cell phone. You have these little ear things to put in your ear and put the cell phone in your pocket. But, you know, if you, I hate to see young people all the time with that cell phone listening. You're using it all day long. I mean, if you use it maybe once in a while, it would be one thing. But to use it constantly as they're doing, I wonder how much, I know very well they're doing damage.
Well, that's right. Not only that, you have to be careful which pocket you put it in, too, because it will still cause radiation and damage to the organs that are near the pocket that you put it in.
That's a good thought.
So, you know, you have to have sort of a carrier that's detached from your body.
Okay, good thought. Okay, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Lorraine Bate. But ladies and gentlemen, you know, it really should not take these things lightly. There really are people who have a different worldview. And they're totally unconcerned about your health. Some of it, it may be financial, but there are quite frankly some people who honestly believe there are too many people in the world. We are using up their natural resources, they would like to see most of his debt. We'll be back here in just a few moments here at Radio Liberty with our special guest, Dr. Lorraine Day. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Lorraine Day. We're talking about some of the very real problems that people face today because of their diet. Now, of course, one of the very interesting things is I think an awful lot of people are beginning to come to realize that diet is so very important, that most of the prepared foods that we have, and certainly those that contain NutraSweet and MSG, are extremely dangerous for us. And so the additives that they're putting in our food are really harmful to our health. What about MSG? How much of a problem is that?
Well, MSG is very detrimental. It causes brain tumors. It also contributes to Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig's disease and other neurological disorders. There are whole books written about these things, NutraSweet and MSG, by very qualified physicians, MDs, showing how bad it is. But the problem is MSG is a non-nutritious flavor enhancer, meaning non-nutritious means it contains no calories. And so naturally, when you can enhance the flavor of food by using something that does not increase the calories in the food, this is being used by the truckload in foods all over the country and all over the world. The amount I talk about in one of my videos, I can't remember, the amount of MSG being used over the last 15 to 20 years has increased exponentially. And so people are getting these things, and yet more and more people are developing various kinds of cancer. As I've said here before, the incidence of cancer in America in 1909 was 3 out of 100. Now it is over 50 out of 100. So what we've really got to do is go back and look at how they were living in 1909. And people say, oh, I wouldn't want to live like that. Well, you better sit up and take notice, because you're either going to start living like that or you're not going to be alive at all. Because even the medical groups predict that by the year 2020, everybody in America will develop cancer at some time in their life. And I should say, just today, I received a letter from a very close friend of mine who was a pediatrician in San Francisco at San Francisco General Hospital when I was first on the faculty there. She and I have been very close friends over the years, and I just got a letter from her today that she has breast cancer. Everybody's getting cancer of some sort. So you have to say, what was different about the way people were living and eating back in 1909 from now? And some people say, oh, well, I have my grandmother has been eating meat all of her life, and she's 102, and she's doing just fine. Well, that's right, maybe, but look at how your grandmother started out 102 years ago. Number one, she ate very little meat because they didn't have enough money to eat very much meat. And secondly, the meat that she would eat was from the cow that was slaughtered that grazed in the pasture in their backyard. And number three is, as she grew up, if she started drinking coffee, people drank one cup of coffee a day. And it was usually less than 8 ounces. Now, if you get that cup of coffee, a cup of coffee that was less than 8 ounces or about 8 ounces, you brewed at home, had approximately 30 milligrams of caffeine in it.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest, Dr. Lorraine Day. She was just talking about, you know, what do you say to the people who say, look, my grandmother's 102 years old, she's eaten meat, you know, she certainly had drank coffee, I mean, and she she wasn't a vegetarian. And Lorraine simply pointed out that if they ate meat, you know, at all, and 100 years ago, meat was hard to come by. If they ate meat, it was meat that was raised on grass, not on the feedlots, as we have today, where they're eating grain. And it was never meant that cows would eat grain or other ground-up cows and this sort of things that we're feeding them today to fatten them up. And then the coffee that they drank in years past, was nowhere near, of course, as strong. You go, you know, they would look at the people who were going to Starbucks all day, every day, getting cup after cup after cup of coffee. But pick up this story there, Lorraine.
Well, I am told, I have not done the research myself, but I am told that a 12-ounce cup of Starbucks coffee contains 190 milligrams of caffeine. That is greater than 6 cups of normal coffee in 1 12-ounce. And, of course, they've got larger cups than that. So the people are getting terribly addicted. That's why they're lining up. And then, of course, they put sugar in it and cream in it, which is even worse. Because sugar is extremely damaging to the body, as we've talked about. But people are getting hooked on caffeine. And one of the reasons that these young high schoolers are dropping dead on the football field or on the basketball field, one of the reasons is because they're drinking huge amounts of caffeine. And the caffeine is a major irritant and an agitator to the a place in the heart that produces the heartbeat, and they can go into arrhythmias and die when they are stressed or excited in the game or working very hard in the game. Their heart just gives out. And so not only are these young kids eating sugar and caffeine, but they may be eating NutraSweet as well and lots of MSG because of all the processed food. And so they're having terrible irregular rhythms of their heart rate, which can come and go rapidly, and they just drop dead on the field or on the basketball court, something like that. So these are the kinds of things that, that parents are not aware of and that the young people are not aware of. I felt really good about it yesterday. I went into a juice place because I was out of town to get some carrot juice. And after school, I was amazed. This juice place was right next door to Starbucks. And, of course, there were a lot of young kids in Starbucks. But there were about 15 kids after school that were going to the juice place to get either smoothies or carrot juice or something like that. And I was jumping for joy because that's the thing to do. You can get a smoothie, and it tastes very sweet. Even carrot juice tastes very, very sweet. You put some apple in it, and it's delicious. And that's where these kids should be and not in the coffee shop next door.
Well, you know, I really think that you are making progress there, and the people are talking about health and about proper diet. I really think it is having an impact on some of our people. Now, because, you know, the great tragedy is we see so much cancer today. From, what was that, 3 in 100 to...
3 in 100 to now it's over 50 in 100, and they predict within another 13 years that it will be everybody. Because, you see, in 1909, the average American ate 300 pounds of grains a year, natural grains, and 200 pounds of natural potatoes, not French fries, but natural potatoes. And by the year 1985, when they again did the statistics, they found out that the amount of grain eating and potato eating had gone down by 50%, and the amount of meat eating had doubled, the amount of milk drinking had doubled, and the amount of chicken eating had gone up 300%. And by 1985, the incidence of cancer up from 3 out of 100 in 1909, it was up to 33 out of 100. Now it's over 50 out of 100, and soon it will be everyone. That is not a good way to die. I can tell you, I had cancer, as many of you know. I had cancer, serious advanced cancer, and it is a horrible thing to have. But I was able to reverse it without chemotherapy and without radiation, by a number of things, only one of which was changing my diet. But that is not enough in and of itself to cure cancer.
All right, well, we may very well touch on that a little later. Do you think that vaccines and the advent of vaccines played any part at all in the dramatic increase in cancer? Have you
Well, I'm
that?
Sure that it's played some. It's probably played more into the autism and the mental difficulty in school and things like that. It seems to be a brain toxin even more than cancer. However,
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Dr. Lorraine Day, and of course I'd asked her the question that I've sort of been plaguing me, wondering if there is any relationship between this dramatic increase in cancer from 3 in 100 up to where we are today, 50 in 100, what part vaccines had played. Lorraine said that she really felt that they were primarily the detrimental effect was probably on autism and the autism spectrum of diseases that we're having. This was one of the major problems with the vaccinations. I assume that would be because of the thimerosal and other toxins they put in them.
However, yes, that's true. However, yeah, it's mercury that they put in them as preservatives. However, there are two other main problems. Number one, that vaccines, and many people do not know this, have to be grown on cell culture in the laboratory. And they may grow it in chicken cells, in sheep cells, in human cells. If it's grown in human cells, any cell line that is grown for any period of time in the laboratory becomes cancerous. And so these vaccines can be grown in cancerous cell lines, and when that's injected into your body, it cannot be helpful. I can tell you it's not healthy. Not only that, cultures are kept alive in the laboratory where the vaccines are grown in these cultures with fetal calf serum. The fetal calf serum is from unborn baby cows. Now, not only is this brutal to extract the unborn baby cow from its mother and kill it for its serum, which is part of the blood, but we've got the problem of mad cow disease. And so we have these calves that can potentially transmit mad cow disease, and it's being put in the vaccines. So not only is there a problem with mercury and autism and developmental difficulties because of the mercury, particularly mental difficulties and learning problems in school, but we have the potential for mad cow disease to be transmitted this way, as well as cancerous cell lines being injected directly into the body. On top of that, the Centers for Disease Control is planning to produce a super vaccine which will have as many as something like 15 or 20 different types of vaccines in it. When you inject that into a human body, you're going to do nothing but raise havoc. I think I've said here once before, but it bears repeating. They didn't.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Day was just talking about the problems inherent in the vaccines, the fact that many of them are grown in the fetal calf serum, and of course, a problem with that is that there may very well be a problem with mad cow disease. Certainly it's in our dairy herds, and they're lying to us about that. And what was the other point you wanted to make?
Well, they've done an experiment because they know that all of these vaccines are contaminated with bacteria, but as you and I both know, there are a number of bacteria that are not supposed to be harmful to humans. They're called non-pathogenic bacteria. And so they've taken some of these vaccines that had a non-pathogenic bacteria in it that's supposed to be non-pathogenic for animals and man, and they have injected them into animals, and nothing happened from these non-pathogenic bacteria. Okay, there was one bacteria in there that was non-pathogenic. Then they've taken vaccines that had a different non-pathogenic bacteria in it and injected it into another group of animals, and nothing happened. But then they had a third group of animals where they combined these vaccines that now had two non-pathogenic bacteria in the vaccine, two non-pathogenic bacteria, and they injected that into another group of animals. And I can't remember exactly what happened. Either they all developed cancer or they all died.
Well, either way, it's not very,
not very hopeful here.
Well, if you ever find out, I'd certainly like to have that in my armamentarium.
Yes, it was amazing because a single one by itself was not a problem. But when they started combining two or more, this was just two, then all the animals either got cancer or died. Well, you see, when they're combining many vaccines to give you in one dose, they are going to have a number of non-pathogenic bacteria in there, and they're all going to combine and cause, just almost an explosion in the child or adult that they are injected into. And I believe that certainly more and more vaccines have caused terrible suppression of the immune system, which has probably led to a lot of diseases, including cancer, because you cannot develop cancer unless your immune system is severely suppressed. And certainly we do know that vaccines cause suppression of the immune system, and on top of that, vaccines don't work and they are not safe.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Herman, who's calling us from Carmel. Hi, Herman. Did you have a question for Dr. Date?
Yes. First of all, thank you for being our guest. I have seen some of your videotapes and also your cookbook and other wellness book. Could you maybe, for the benefit of listeners who haven't heard about them, I know this isn't a selling program, but just make us aware of them, because just listening to what you've talked about tonight is pretty discouraging. In other words, the person thinks, well, what on earth can I do? You know, everything is going to kill me. But also, and I'll take my answer off the air, could you briefly discuss the issue of stress in our society and how going back to what we had at the beginning of our nation, which was basically a Sabbath day rest where people had one day a week that they didn't work and weren't exposed to all the stresses. Anyways, just to comment on that. Thank you, and I'll take the answer off the air.
Sure. Number one, you asked about, I have, again, as I spoke about earlier, I developed cancer myself. I am a physician, a medical doctor. I developed cancer. I refused radiation, chemotherapy, and I refused mastectomy, even though it was breast cancer. And I got well by totally natural methods. And my cancer first appeared in 1992, and I am totally well and cancer-free and have been for many, many years. My website is www.drday.com, drday.com. Now, write that down, because there are a number of websites that are trying to look like they belong to me. That is the only health website that belongs to me. drday.com. And I've got a number of videos and DVDs. I've got a workbook which helps you implement the information on the videos. It's a 300-page workbook. It has a lot of information on the spiritual aspects of disease, because all disease starts in the heart. It starts because we want to live and eat our way rather than God's way. When we do that, we always will end up sick. And so we have to learn how to do it God's way. And so I have a number of videos. The video that contains the exact plan I use to get well is called You Can't Improve on God. And then I have a number of others. I have 9 videos on health. One of them is called Cancer Doesn't Scare Me Anymore, which is particularly helpful for cancer patients. Another one called Diseases Don't Just Happen. I think that Stan carries some of those as well. You can contact him at Radio Liberty. So I have those available. And your question was about stress. The stress is an extremely important part. All disease is caused by 3 factors: malnutrition, dehydration, and stress. Malnutrition, because people are eating lots of calories. They don't lack for calories, but they're not eating the proper food that their body needs to make healthy cells. Dehydration, because people are drinking coffee, caffeinated soda, alcohol, all of those dehydrate the body. The body loses 10 glasses of water every day just by the processes of daily living. That means without even working hard or without it being a hot day. If you don't replace those losses, or if you drink caffeinated anything, you will become dehydrated, and that's one of the causes of cancer, one of the causes of mental illness, one of the causes of heart disease. It's a cause of almost every disease. And then stress. Stress is a major factor. I know of a woman who was a friend of mine who was eating right, who was exercising, and started getting sick, and she eventually died because she could not give up her anger. She had a very stressful marriage and could not give up her anger and died really because of her anger. Now that is a sad thing to say, but you can die from that, because when you are stressed, the body doesn't understand whether it's domestic stress or job stress or stress from anger or stress from grudge holding, but you go into the fight or flight reaction. God has given us this ability to have this fight or flight reaction when you are chased by a wild animal or an attacker, or you've heard of these great feats of strength where a mother can suddenly lift up a car off of her child. That's the fight or flight reaction. That's because the body then suddenly puts out a huge amount of adrenaline, which gives you extra energy, and it puts out cortisone, which suppresses your immune system and also suppresses your pain, your ability to feel pain. But it is of short duration, and if you are running from an attack or running from a bear, then you work off all that adrenaline. But if you have an unhappy marriage, you're unhappy in your job, and you are constantly under this tremendous stress, your body keeps pouring out adrenaline and cortisone, which suppresses your immune system, and so you are unable to fight disease. And interestingly, Orthodox medicine is constantly scratching their head saying, does stress cause disease? Does it play any part in disease? You know how you feel when you are angry. Your stomach is in a knot. You feel horrible. And so, the average person knows that bad things are going on in their body when they are angry. When you hold grudges and are angry, by the way, something like 50% of heart attacks occur after an episode of anger. It's been shown that 1 to 5 minutes of anger will suppress your immune system for 5 hours, where 1 to 5 minutes of hearty laughter will boost your immune system for 24 hours. So how you feel and how you react is extremely important. Stress is a major factor in disease.
Amen to that. Well, right then, let's go to Eric calling us from Compton. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question for Dr. Day, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Doc. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Okay, Dr. Day, how are you?
Fine.
I've got a quick question for you. Two questions, actually. Have you heard of something called mana levy? It's some kind of juice that's supposed to be some kind of miracle juice or something. Have you ever heard of, maybe I should be asking you.
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, I've heard of a number of juices like noni juice and all that. But you see, there is no quick fix.
Yeah.
There is no quick fix. There's no disease identified that is caused by a lack of one of these juices. Disease is caused, if you have a headache, it's not caused by a deficiency of noni juice or manaloa or anything like that. It's caused from too much tension and too much stress, or not drinking enough water, or not getting enough sleep, or being under too much tension. This is what causes symptoms and what causes disease. So what you've got to do is you've got to get your life in order, and just taking something, a quick fix, or one thing people say, raspberries are very good for you. Well, raspberries are good for you, and blueberries are good for you. But you don't want to just sit around and eat blueberries all the time. You've got to have a proper diet. You've got to get your sleep. You've got to drink your water. All of these things contribute to health or to disease.
Okay. And what about the values of juicing in particular?
Juicing is extremely important particularly for people who are not in good health, but it's certainly also helpful to maintain health. People say, well, if you juice, you take the pulp out, and isn't the pulp good for you? Yes, the pulp is good for you. However, you can get a huge amount of nutrition in juice. And when I was sick and getting well, I drank the juice from 35 pounds of carrots a week. Now, I could never eat 35 pounds of carrots if I just ate them. I'd never want to see another carrot, and I could never eat anything else. I ate, and still do eat, 3 meals a day of food. But I, at that time, was drinking 8 glasses of carrot juice a day and 4 glasses of green leafy vegetable juice. In between my meals, I still drank a lot of carrot juice, not that much, but I still drink a lot of it, and green leafy vegetable juice, because it's a way to get a huge amount of nutrition into your body in a way that your intestines don't have to expend a lot of energy to digest it. And that's why you drink juice, if you're going to drink it in between meals. You drink that then because your body doesn't have to waste energy digesting it. You see, everything in the body has to rest at various times. It has to rest, your heart rests in between beats. Your intestines need to rest in between meals. Now, I know there are many diets that say you should eat like 6 or 8 small meals a day, but then your intestines never get to rest, and that is not good for your body. By the way, the previous caller asked me to talk about a day of rest once a week, and that is also very important. The body is meant to rest one day a week. That's the way God designed it. He said in Genesis that he created the earth and everything in it in 6 days, and on the 7th day he made that day holy so we would set it apart, so we would spend the time with him and leave our regular duties. And even the animals are supposed to be rested on the 7th day Sabbath. You will also notice in the Bible that Jesus did 50% of his healings on one particular day of the week, and that was the 7th day Sabbath, which is Saturday, and all the other 50% he did on various days of the week that we are not told. But we are told that there is a special healing blessing in the 7th day Sabbath, which is Saturday.
Okay, anything else you wanted to ask?
Oh, that'll be all. God bless you, Dr. Day. Thanks, Dr. Sands.
Thank you,
Eric. And let's go to John calling us from Palm Springs. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm just curious about one question involving vitamins, supplements, the kind of things that you can buy in Walmart, Walgreens. Are they good for you?
Well, let's just talk about that for a minute. Do you know where they get the materials to make these vitamin pills? All companies. Do you know where they get those? Do you think that there are some little gremlins grinding up fresh veggies someplace and they extract them from that? Do you know where they come from?
Oh, I think some are from animal source.
Well, they come from even worse sources than that. They come from toxic livers, from sewage sludge. They come from waste material, because the USP, which is the government agency that I think it's the Pharmacopeia that tells the companies that make these that it doesn't matter where they come from as long as they look the same under the microscope. When you understand where these things come from, you wouldn't want to put them in your body. But on top of that, as I said earlier in the program, you may not have heard it, God made food. He made it in all the right proportions and combinations. When man takes it apart and then concentrates up particular active ingredients in it, it acts in the body like a drug. So you cannot micromanage your body. You need to eat whole foods. You need to eat dark green leafy lettuce and tomatoes and grains and vegetables. You need to eat those things in the way God made them, because man has become very arrogant. Man says he can make it better. A lot of people say, oh, well, the soil is so depleted, you've got to take extra vitamins and minerals. No, you don't. What you need to do is you need to buy good food, preferably organically grown, which means it's grown without pesticides. You don't need extra pesticides on your on your food. And it's usually grown in healthier soil, organic food is. And when you eat organically grown food, and then when you sprout your bean seeds and grains rather than cook them, you will increase their nutrition by up to 600%. And then when you juice, in between meals, when you juice carrot juice or green leafy vegetable juice, you will get huge amounts of nutrients into your body that you can't do by just eating food. So that's the way you overcome the depletion in the soil. I got well from cancer not just by diet, but by the other kinds of things that I talk about on my videos as well. But the diet I ate was not a diet of 100 years ago. I got well in the last, I got well in 1993 to 1996. I was getting sicker for a while until I understood the plan, and then I got well. So I've been well for over 10 years, and I ate the food from the soil that's available now, not 100 years ago. So, and the other thing is that many people ask, oh, well, you know, the fruits and vegetables that come from depleted soil, and yet they're eating animal products which are being fed ground up other dead animals that are diseased. So, you know, you've got to get your priorities straight. But vitamins and minerals are really man's arrogant way of saying we can improve on the way God made food, but we can't.
Okay, I hope that answers your question, John.
Well, yeah, thank you, but one last aspect is, do you think that they're harmful to take those supplements,
yes,
actually?
Yes, in fact, when I first developed my cancer...
Hold that thought for just a minute.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a moment. All right, go right ahead, Lorraine.
When I first developed my cancer, I took a lot of supplements, and my tumor grew when I was taking a lot of supplements. And maybe we can talk about the vitamin C here. The government has now started doing studies to look at high-dose vitamin C in the treatment of cancer. A number of cancer clinics, less non-toxic cancer clinics in Mexico, are using high-dose vitamin C intravenously. And I actually had that done when I first had cancer before I understood about the plan. And I was shocked because my tumor grew when I was using high-dose vitamin C, and I couldn't understand why. But here is the answer. The Linus Pauling for years was going around the country talking about how people should use high-dose vitamin C, and it would prevent colds and the flu and all that. And he was recommending, I think, 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Well, his partner, Dr. Arthur Robinson, finally said to Linus Pauling, he was the head of the Linus Pauling Institute, Dr. Robinson was, he said, you know, you keep telling everybody they should use this high-dose vitamin C, but nobody's done any research on it. We should do some research to see if it's true. And so Linus Pauling agreed, and they set up some animal studies, and they gave the animals the dose that would be equivalent of for the 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C in a human. And these animals all had tumors already, and they wanted to see if it decreased the tumor size or if it caused an increase. And every vitamin they tried actually caused an increase in the tumor size in these animals. And the only thing they could find that would cause a decrease in the tumor size was when they gave the animals a raw vegetarian diet. That's what caused the decrease in the tumor size. All right. So, and I got this straight from Dr. Arthur Robinson himself. Linus Pauling was very upset when this research showed this, and he confiscated all of the research materials and fired Dr. Robinson, and it became a big scandal. Dr. Robinson eventually sued Dr. Pauling and won a $500,000 judgment against him. But the interesting thing was all the time Linus Pauling was saying this and taking his vitamin C and said it prevented cancer, both he and his wife developed cancer. Both of them had conventional treatment. They didn't go alternative. They went and had conventional treatment, and both died of their cancer.
Hey, we're out of time. Thank you so very much, Lorraine. Really appreciate your being with us. And Jack, I'm afraid we're not going to get to you, but thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I'm afraid that we're out of time. We're not going to be able to take any more callers. If somebody is hanging on the line, I'll be glad to talk to them after the program. But we do carry a number of Dr. Lorraine Day's videos. Certainly cancer doesn't scare me anymore. You can't improve on God. Diseases don't just happen. Turn on the light. I've forgotten what the fifth one is. Dr. Day is a very, very good scientist, and we have a great deal of respect for her. Anyway, if you'd like, of course, to get Dr. Lorraine Day's videos, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to understand why we still have cancer in our society, why there's so many of them, why, let me suggest that you obtain a copy of my four tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians. This is based upon a lecture that was given in 1969 by the director of the medical director of the Planned Parenthood, who laid it all out, how there were treatments for cancer in 1969 that were being actively suppressed. They knew about it. They knew what to do. But there are too many people in the world. They even talked about creating new diseases. And, of course, shortly after that, plans were made for the creation of AIDS. But you'll actually hear a fascinating four-tape set, The New Order of the Barbarians. We have a four-tape set on Laetril. We have a four-tape set on Why Do We Still Have Cancer? A four-tape set on genocide. Could it be that we've been lied to for many years? Could it be that vaccines are harmful? That they really do very little good? Could it be that the mercury in the vaccines is responsible for the autism epidemic? Well, we have a great deal of information on that, and there's no question in my mind that we have poisoned our children. We've gotten it down to about 1 in 150 children now has autism, and even more have autism spectrum diseases, so that about 1 in every 6 American child, has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and that did not happen by accident. If you'd like to get the material we have on the mercury, we have actually one video. It's by Dr. Ayub. It's on the influenza vaccine, which still contains a full dose of mercury and contributes to Alzheimer's disease dramatically. And the scientific studies are there. Anybody who doubts that, we can give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of Dr. Fudenberg's abstract, an abstract from Dr. Fudenberg, where he points out that influenza vaccine, taken 3 or 4 doses over a 5-year period, if you're between 60 and 65, increases your incidence of Alzheimer's disease 1,000%. The brains of the people with Alzheimer's disease have, I don't know, 25 or 50 times as much aluminum in them. The figure escapes me right now, but a dramatic increase, I should say, in mercury and increase in aluminum, 25 to 50% increase in mercury. We have 2 4 tape sets. We have actually 2 DVDs. You need to understand they're poisoning our children, and they're poisoning us as well. And what's even worse is they know what they're doing. You need to get our material on water fluoridation. Let me suggest my talk on the hidden agenda. And then, of course, the syllabus that goes with that will give you the documentation of how they're poisoning our children. There is so much that you could do to protect your health, but you're going to have to become informed. We have 4 tape sets on aspartame and MSG. We carry a wonderful book called Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, going into the toxic effects of aspartame and MSG. We have, of course, a book. It's about 2 inches thick. It's the Bible on this, written by Dr. Roberts. It's entitled Aspartame, the Forgotten Epidemic. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you can get any of the items we've talked about. We'll be glad to send you a free catalog. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Learn about health. And then, of course, please pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.